it's really important to underline that, you know, what we're going to see, I think, is what happened in Hungary under Orbán's rise to power. Trump and J.D. Vance are both ardent admirers of Viktor Orbán, and Orbán basically used his version of Elon Musk to buy out the national press and turn it into a you know, party propaganda arm. And, you know, that is a very real and present danger with Trump coming back into power and feeling this kind of impunity and this drive to avenge the people he sees as his enemies. It's crucial that the press hold the line and, you know, follow the example of the Des Moines Register and not the example of ABC News.
We want to thank you, Chris Lehman, for being with us, D.C. Bureau Chief for The Nation. We'll link to your piece. Trump's attack on the free press is just getting started. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Mike Burke, Anjali Kamat, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Hannah Elias. Our Executive Director, Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley, John Randolph, Paul Powell, Mike DiFilippo, Miguel Noguera, Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO's 2024 Catalog of Connections is hot off the presses. To get your copy featuring your favorite programs, letters from the board, and so much more, contact our membership director by calling 971-801-1381. That's 971-801-1381, or by emailing membership@kboo.org. We can't wait to connect with you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, the final meeting of Portland's Commissioner Form of Government convened this morning in the newly renovated City Hall.
Federal help may be on the way for struggling rural hospitals.
And we'll get an inside look at the Portland occult bookstore, Dark Star Magic.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, December 18th, 2024. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Nate Kapp.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Today was the final City Council meeting of the Commission Form of Government. It was also the first City Council meeting in the newly renovated Council Chambers at City Hall. Portlanders approved an overhaul of their city government in 2022, and it becomes a reality in a few short days. In November, they elected 12 city councilors from 4 geographic districts, and tomorrow, Thursday, they'll be sworn into office. The first official meeting of the new city council will be January 2nd, when the councilors will elect a council president and vice president. Here's some of the remarks made by outgoing Mayor Ted Wheeler in the newly renovated city council chambers this morning.
Welcome, everybody, to the newly renovated Portland City Hall chambers. As you can tell, this is a trial run of the new chambers. There will be some glitches today as we work through some of the the telecast, as well as some of the sound and potentially some of the lighting issues. We want to make sure that we get all the bugs out of the council chamber prior to tossing the keys across the table to the new council on January 1st. But I am very proud to announce that we are on track to deliver the substantially renovated City Hall to the new mayor and to the new council on January 1st. Of course, I will ask for your patience. We may have to stop a time or two to adjust some of the technology issues or some of the physical aspects of the chamber, so just bear with us. This is an important day in the lives of many, and I want to reflect that, including all of us sitting up here at the dais. Today marks the last time that I will convene the City Council as your mayor. And this is the last day of meetings for this City Council. Also, after 110 years, this is the last day that we will be convened as the commission form of government.
That was Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler. It's a new frontier for Portland city leaders and for how the government operates. The City Councilors will need to form legislative committees on a variety of topics. The mayor will head up all of the city's administrative functions and will carry out the policies passed by the council alongside the city administrator. Since the election was certified, city councilors have been in onboarding sessions to learn about their new roles and responsibilities. As Wheeler said, they'll take the reins of city government on New Year's Day.
Oregon gained over 5,000 jobs in November, following a trend of modest growth for the state. Oregon's unemployment rate was 4.1% in November, just slightly higher than October. It has consistently remained between 4.0 and 4.2% since October of 2023 and is on par with the U.S. employment rate as a whole. November's job gains, which do not include farm-related positions, were largest in healthcare and social assistance, construction, and professional and business services, which added 700 jobs. Declines were largest in leisure and hospitality, which reported 700 jobs lost. Private healthcare and social assistance has been adding jobs quite rapidly since June of 2022. The sector expanded by over 40,000 jobs during that period. The fastest growing were social assistance, nursing, and residential care facilities. Hospitals and ambulatory healthcare services both grew, but at slower rates, around 11 to 12%. Construction came back from a three-month dip, returning the sector's total employment to 117,500, about where it had been starting in July of 2022. Only two major industries, retail, trade, and leisure, and hospitality, declined by 1,000 jobs or more. About half of the major industries were essentially flat over the year, without major changes in either direction. The Oregon Employment Department plans to release the November County and Metropolitan Area unemployment rates next Tuesday.
Washington State has cleared its backlog of sexual assault kits, a recent audit found. Law enforcement in Washington had 9,000 untested kits as recently as 2018. Some dated back nearly 40 years, delaying justice for survivors. The kit is created immediately after an assault. A victim may choose or be asked to undergo forensic examination to collect any evidence left behind. New legislation in 2022 required state police to test any new kit that comes in within 45 days. Police prioritize the kits that are connected to active investigations and violent crimes. But whether or not the kits are part of an active investigation, they're important pieces of evidence and can help survivors get closure. Just last year, a previously untested kit from 1994 linked a Spokane man to a murder in California that happened 40 years prior. The backlog has helped solve 8 cold cases in Washington since 2022. State Auditor Pat McCarthy wrote, quote, "The State Patrol has done commendable work. Everyone who submits a sexual assault kit deserves to know it will be treated with seriousness and due diligence, and through this independent review, we can confirm that is now the case in Washington." End quote.
Rural hospitals in Oregon and across the country are struggling to keep their doors open because of financial challenges. But as Isabel Charlet reports, a federal pilot program starting next year will work closely with 8 qualifying hospitals to turn things around.
A new federal program launching next year is designed to help rural hospitals struggling to stay afloat. 8 hospitals in Oregon are among about 360 rural hospitals at risk of closing because of severe financial problems, according to the Center for Healthcare Quality and Payment Reform. That's why the National Rural Health Resource Center is launching the federal Rural Hospital Stabilization Pilot Program. The center's chief operating officer, Alyssa Meller, says the program will offer technical assistance for up to 2 years to an initial cohort of 8 hospitals and virtual community support to 12 more.
It is a program that's aiming to improve the healthcare in rural communities by really helping keep healthcare services available locally to increase patient volume and improve revenue.
Meller says the program will help engage the hospital's communities to promote services too. The application period opens today and closes January 15th. Research shows the main factor putting hundreds of rural hospitals at risk of closure is that private insurance plans reimburse them less than the cost of providing patient care. Meller explains operating costs often exceed reimbursement rates from Medicare and Medicaid, and says smaller hospitals may lack the services tailored to the needs of local residents who may choose to go elsewhere for care.
And so again, this program then will help stabilize their current service line, but also will help them dive into what is needed at that local level and provide technical assistance and support.
Meller says by last week, about 300 hospitals had already registered for today's virtual information session about the program. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
With Christmas just a week away, some Amazon warehouse workers may be going on strike. Amazon failed to meet a December 15th deadline to agree to open talks with workers at the company's JFK 8 warehouse in Staten Island, New York. This was the first Amazon warehouse in the U.S. to win a union election in 2022. Unions have authorized strikes in several cities, including New York, Atlanta, and suburban Chicago. In a flyer, Portland's Teamsters Local 206 announced a picket at the Amazon warehouse in Troutdale on Thursday and Friday. In Washington, D.C., Senator Bernie Sanders released a report detailing the increased risk to workers' safety because of the company's intense focus on speed and productivity. Sanders said, quote, "The shockingly dangerous working conditions at Amazon's warehouses revealed in this 160-page report are beyond unacceptable," end quote. The report found that Amazon warehouses recorded 30% more injuries than the warehouse industry average in 2023. In each of the past 7 years, Amazon workers were nearly twice as likely to be injured on the job than workers at other warehouses. The report is the result of an 18-month investigation by the Senate Health, Education, and Labor and Pensions Committee, which Sanders chairs.
The government defends its drone responses, lawmakers debate anti-Islamophobia and transgender policies, a stopgap spending deal sparks tensions, and Trump threatens more legal actions against the media. With more on the story, Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
As open and as transparent with the American people as we can be. What we won't do is speculate or hypothesize about something we don't know.
National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby is defending the response to the numerous drone sightings. The Defense and Homeland Security Department say they found no national threats in the 5,000 reports, but local officials and members of Congress accuse the administration of minimizing public concerns. Federal law enforcement, security, and aviation agencies are deploying more detection technology and urging Congress tighten drone laws. The Biden administration has introduced a first national strategy for combating Islamophobia and anti-Arab hate. Edward Ahmed Mitchell of the Council on American-Islamic Relations calls it insufficient for what is a dangerous moment. He says it lacks meaningful changes to federal policies and is coming too late.
Normally, we would celebrate a White House strategy to combat Islamophobia, but the problem is they've released it with a month left, so it can't have any real impact.
Meanwhile, in Nebraska, state lawmakers prepare for the new legislative session, where they'll debate LGBTQ+ rights. Governor Jim Pillen has signaled plans to reintroduce a bill banning transgender students from participating in sports outside of their gender at birth. Last year, a similar proposal narrowly failed. Grant Friedman is with the ACLU of Nebraska.
getting folks to realize they're there to make Nebraska a better place for everyone and focus on the issues that need to be dealt with and not kind of these fringe issues that is being blown out of proportion across the country.
On Capitol Hill, congressional leaders have finalized a year-end spending package before Friday's government shutdown. It includes a $100 billion disaster aid provision that contains $10 billion for farmers. That has drawn criticism from conservative budget hawks who argue Speaker Mike Johnson conceded too much to Democrats. Johnson's position remains tenuous given his very narrow majority. In New York, Luigi Mangione has been indicted on first-degree murder and other charges in the ambush killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson. Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg called the shooting a premeditated act of terror.
This was a frightening, well-planned, targeted murder that was intended to cause shock and attention and intimidation.
In other legal news, President-elect Donald Trump is suing the Des Moines Register, its parent company, and pollster J.N. Seltzer over a pre-election poll showing him trailing Vice President Kamala Harris in Iowa. The lawsuit alleges that amounts to election interference, though legal experts question the argument's validity. Free speech advocates are denouncing Trump's suits against the press as attacks on the First Amendment. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hey, how are you?
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden on his latest story for the paper. At 6, it's Sea Change Radio. At 6:30, it's Free Culture Radio. Then at 7 o'clock, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with an overnight low of 45 degrees, and those clouds are going to stick around tomorrow with a high of 55 degrees. Today in history, in 1944, the U.S. Supreme Court issues its decision in Korematsu versus the United States, clearing the way for 120,000 Japanese Americans to be incarcerated in internment camps during World War II. The quote of the day is from Swiss-German artist Paul Klee, who wrote, quote, "When looking at any significant work of art, remember that a more significant one probably has had to be sacrificed."
An electricity project on the Navajo Nation is bringing power to the unconnected. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nearly 17,000 homes on tribal land still need electricity hookups. A majority of them are spread across the Navajo Nation, where climate change makes it harder for families to keep cool. The Mountain West News Bureau's Kayla Bradle highlights one program that's changing lives.
It's a scorching hot morning in the Navajo Nation. In the foothills of Navajo Mountain, Leland Tomasio is standing outside his home, trying to catch a breeze.
We have a metal roof on top, you know. So all that heat just kind of builds up inside and it just cooks the place up inside.
That wasn't always the case, but Tomasio says the reservation feels hotter each year. The Tomasios are one of 13,000 families living without electricity here. That's nearly a third of the homes on the reservation, which stretches across parts of Arizona, Utah, and New Mexico. A Navajo utility nonprofit started in the late 50s to help change that. But progress has been slow since then. A land dispute with the Hopi tribe led to a development ban across 1.5 million acres for several decades. And getting a home site lease approved and accepted for electricity development can take years.
So come on in.
Yeah.
Back at the Navajo Nation, the Tomasios are standing in their kitchen. A coffee maker and microwave are on the counter. Paulette Tomasio says they've never been used.
You wish you had all these stuff, you know, like, oh, these are going to be on soon.
She then points at the stainless steel fridge tucked against the far wall.
Even this refrigerator, this is a fake refrigerator.
But days without a refrigerator and air conditioning are now over for the Tomasios. Their home was one of 170 on the reservation that got connected to the electric grid this year. That's thanks to a mutual aid program called Light Up Navajo that relies on private and federal funding and volunteer workers.
That just brings tears to my eyes. And like every morning we get up and I just always think to myself and just wait and wait. One day this will come.
And now she says heat-related stresses no longer consume her. For National Native News, I'm Caleb Radel.
The U.S. Interior Department has awarded the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission more than $800,000 for recovery efforts for American martens, an endangered mammal in Wisconsin. They've been trapped for their fur for various purposes, and their preferred habitats have been altered. Jonathan Pauly is a professor of forest and wildlife ecology at UW-Madison.
This work is really trying to understand how do we manage habitat in a meaningful way on these working landscapes to increase martin habitat and connectivity of these different subpopulations to ensure martens are here for the foreseeable future.
Pauly says the grant money from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation's America the Beautiful Challenge will bring together a diverse group of folks from tribal, federal, state, and academic levels over 4 years to create a forest management proposal with recommended habitat improvements for martin recovery in Wisconsin. The project will also include training for future biologists and ecologists. Legislation being signed by Cherokee Nation leaders in Oklahoma paves the way for construction of cell towers across the reservation. According to the tribe, the Cherokee Connect Broadband Initiative includes 15 communication towers to provide affordable and reliable high-speed internet and cellular service to 16 unserved and underserved communities in the Cherokee Nation. The tribe received a $34 million federal grant for its broadband efforts and expects to invest another $11 million into the effort. The legislation was approved by the Cherokee Nation Council during its December meeting and will be signed into law Wednesday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Satellite data reveals the true scale of methane pollution. New findings suggest that emissions of the potent global warming gas from landfills could be much higher than officially reported. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. When you throw away organic material like food and yard waste, it often ends up in a landfill, where it emits methane as it decomposes.
Landfills are the third largest source of methane in the United States.
Edwin Lemaire is with the nonprofit Environmental Defense Fund. When methane is released to the atmosphere, it contributes to climate change because it's a powerful planet-warming gas. In the short term, methane traps 80 times more heat than carbon dioxide. Many landfills have to report their methane pollution to the EPA, and in 2021, they reported releasing 3.7 million metric tons. But Lemaire's group is using satellite data to track methane from landfills, and he says the real number could be much higher than reported.
Recent satellite measurements have shown that actual emissions could be over 6 million metric tons per year.
So Lemaire says to prevent the worst impacts of climate change, it's critical to reduce this heat-trapping pollution. For example, landfills could capture the gas, which can be used to produce energy. And he says people can help reduce methane by sending less food and yard waste to landfills in the first place. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Dark Star Magic is a bookstore located in Portland's Central East Side, a newer addition to Portland's bookstore scene. They focus on rare occult books and works that date back centuries. KBOO reporter Marissa spoke with the owners to see what magic they had to share.
You may have noticed that Portland has a lot of bookshops, but Steve Kinchin was dismayed to find that one particular topic seemed to be missing from the shelves. Magic.
Typical booksellers don't carry a big selection on alchemy or Kabbalah, and someone needed to fill that void. My name is Steve Kinchin.
My name is Uta Plotkin.
We're co-owners of Dark Star Magic. We are a bookstore that specializes in occult books, books on magic, ritual. We started with two boxes of books and an eBay account.
Steve and I became friends when we were both working for Radio Cab 15 years ago or something.
A little over that.
And he has been talking about opening this bookstore ever since I've known him.
This has been just a dream I've always had. I've just always been interested in magic since I was, you know, like 8. I think a lot of people just think of magic as being evil or dark in some way, which is, of course, not true. Magic is simply an approach to how we deal with the universe. I think anything that would be quote-unquote good or evil would be in the heart of the person doing the magic. And if you're coming from a place of love and, you know, trying to be beneficial, that's not evil. Magic is really nothing more than causing change to occur in conformity with your will. We all do magic every single day of our lives. Maybe we don't call it magic, but it's working your will in the world. Some people like to do that ritually. But again, it's a spirituality that's not commonly represented in mainstream sources.
I think everybody looks for a way to try to explain the world around them mm-hmm. and connect to something maybe larger than themselves. And this is just one other way to do that.
The store itself is an act of magic that started off humble, but through will and a lot of hard work has become what it is.
Portland's my home and I care about it. And when the pandemic hit and there was just so much going on and everybody was like, what's happening here? And what's gonna happen? And it felt really good to open a new business, a weird business, a business that really serves a niche community and that helps people to get through difficult times.
In June, we had a pride display in our window and somebody broke out the window and tried to light the store on fire. Fortunately, it was responded to in time and no damage really was done. But even through that, the outpouring of love and support from around the world just really drove home the point that what we're doing is really important to a lot of people out there. And, you know, we're offering stuff that they can't find except in dark corners of the internet somewhere, you know. We do a lot of classes over there. We've done things on chaos magic, herbal magic, runes. We did a thing on the alt-right in satanic movements, astrology, really just about everything.
We like to invite people who have knowledge in these areas to contact us if they would like to teach a class. And we also have original art hanging on our walls, so we're always inviting local artists to come to us if they feel like their art would be a good fit for our store.
One of the comments we get most frequently from people is how well curated the books are. One day I was at the store and I was actually closed and there was a knock at the door and there was an older gentleman and he brought in a book that was so rare and valuable. It was a first edition of a grimoire from 1801. It was just a stunning piece. And he said, I know it's worth a lot more money, but just give me $350 for it, which I immediately did. Restored, it's now worth maybe $10,000. That's how sometimes they walk through the door and somebody's like, I know that this is a good place to bring this book. It's a lot of just constantly searching and constantly searching and constantly searching to find those books that I bring in. And right now, I think the oldest book we have was published in 1551. I do love the old antique volumes because there comes a point where you look at the book and it's been here for hundreds of years. It's got a story in and of itself beyond what's written on the pages. And you've got people's notes and their names written in there. And it's really interesting. It's just a little piece of history. We carry new, used, and rare books, and we're always looking to purchase or do trades with people. As long as they're occult books, bring them on in. A lot of people comment when they come in how they really love the atmosphere. We have an altar, a shrine set up in the store that adds to that ambiance. We're on Burnside, at 729 East Burnside, a couple doors down from Grendel's Coffee.
Right across from Bossa Nova Ballroom.
Bossa Nova Ballroom. Of course, darkstarmagic.com.
Dark Star Magic is open Wednesday through Sunday. For KBOO, this is Marissa.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael knows to not surrender prematurely to tyrants.
ABC will pay $15 million to settle a defamation suit brought by Trump. Special prosecutor drops cases against Trump. New York judge suspends sentencing in Trump's felony convictions. FBI Director Wray resigns, clearing the way for cash, Patel. Silicon Valley execs flocking to Mar-a-Lago with blank checks. ATF braces for a likely rollback of its gun control efforts. What will the vaccine makers need to fork over for Trump to keep Kennedy on a leash? Why is everyone surrendering? Are the powerful abandoning the rest of us? But there's just so much space in an oligarchy. Millionaires got squeezed out by billionaires, and with trillionaires soon to come, any corroded net, even a government safety net, can decay without collapsing. It takes a sudden strong thud like a Trump administration, leaving so many clinging to strands. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael, Nina Mayfair, Josh Salem, and Marissa. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Farah Siddiqui, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. Our evening news director is the Puzzle Master, Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Nate Kapp.
And I'm Sam Bowman. All our KBOO programs are made possible by